Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We're back with another episode of Mouthing Off, a theater, arts, and culture podcast for the Twin Cities and beyond. I'm Kevin Couchman. Opening, Moderation, a play about social media content moderators at The Hive in the heart of the Twin Cities, the bleeding heart of the Twin Cities, October 3rd to the 13th. Thursday, October 3rd is Pay What You Can. You have no excuse. You can just come for free on Thursday, October 3rd. See a new play. It's going to be very entertaining. That is all we're going to be talking about tonight on Mouthing Off. Go to moderationplay.com. I have a certain amount of bias. It is a play I wrote. Okay. We're making radio. I'm joined by my usual, I guess, partners in crime here. This is The Beyond because she's in New York City doing a Jean Genet play. Mari Sittner. Mari, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here with you guys because I'm so jealous that you're all in a room so many days a week getting to rehearse this incredible play. But I've been chronically online getting brain sick, looking at those Facebook ad analytics because okay. We want everybody to come out and see this show. So I'm there with your spirit.
There will not be another play quite like Moderation in the Twin Cities or the region this year. I can say that with some certainty. Moderationplay.com. It is about 80 minutes. There is not an intermission. You will not regret attending. It is a contemporary play. It is dark. It is funny. It is dangerous. It is about very online people dealing with content moderation, which since I wrote it in 2019 became, I guess, front page news. People have really thought about content moderation quite a lot. They weren't thinking so much about it when I wrote it, but now it's a big deal because it seems to, I don't know, sway elections and impact a lot of things that affect our lives. Acting in the play, one half of the play, Amanda. You know Amanda by now. If you listen to this show, you know Amanda. Amanda, how are things out in the country, out west? How are you?
They are fantastic. It's been a gorgeous September that we've had, so I feel really grateful. It's been super amazing diving into this play. For those of you who maybe haven't listened before, this is the fourth time I've actually visited this play, and the fourth time's the charm, I guess, because this is a full production of the show and not just a Zoom reading or a workshop. And so I'm really excited to, you know, dive fully into the deep end, if you will. And it really is the deep end, folks, of the internet. It's awesome. It's, if you're a millennial, if you're a Gen Zer, if you're a Gen Xer, anybody online, or even if you're not online and you want to know more about it.
Yeah, if you're a boomer trying to decide whether or not to blow all your money on cruises or to leave it to your Zoomer grandchildren, come to Moderation. You'll understand them better. You're the one. You have the money. You can afford the ticket. The tickets are not that expensive. Oh, and I have a little secret for you. I have a little secret about the tickets, which I will share after I introduce the other half of Moderation. The manager on the scene, the one you ask for if you're being a Karen. If you're upset about the quality of the content moderation, you go to the great Matt Sachs. Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much, Kevin. I really appreciate it. I've never been a manager of made me think I have work later tonight. And I'm thinking about, oh, can I see your manager? Can I talk to the manager? So,
well, you know, listen, if you come to Moderation, folks, again, moderationplay.com, you cannot miss it. The tickets are on sale now. It's at the Hive, which we're going to talk up a bunch. Great little venue right in the heart of the cities. It's right over by Hamlin. It's not far from the light rail. If you take public transportation, you can make your way there. Lots of street parking. The run is October 3rd to the 13th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday matinee. We take a little break, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday matinee, and we're done. You got 8 chances to see this thing. And I have it on good authority that this play may be making its way elsewhere. And if you see it here, you can say, I saw Moderation in the original production in St. Paul, Minnesota. You can impress your friends. You can boast about it on social media. You saw Prince at First Avenue. You're that kind of a person. Yeah, what's up, Amanda?
Exactly. Well, so many people, I think, have this, I think it used to be this way, this notion that, oh, you know, New York is kind of the place to be for the new hot shows. And then they sort of disseminate across the regional theaters and then to the smaller theaters. But actually, we see this really cool trend where you have shows like Dear Evan Hansen or I'm trying to think what other Shout Sister Shout, shows that are now originating in these regional theaters or elsewhere outside of New York and then going, and then they are so wildly popular and then going to New York off Broadway, maybe Broadway or like the Public or Roundabout, and then going back out. So it's this really interesting phenomenon happening. So if you never know where this play is going to end up. So like Kevin said, if you want to see the OG Prince at First Ave, see Moderation at the Hive Collaborative in St. Paul. And what's your big secret, Kevin?
If you want $5 off, go and buy yourself a Starbucks on us. The code is Badmouth. Easy to remember. It's the name of the theater company. Badmouth, $5 off. One more time, moderationplay.com. The opening Thursday, we're going to call it opening. It's opening. Yeah. We're doing it for a crowd for the first time, for an audience the first time. That is pay what you can. So if you're a student, you're counting your dollars, that's the show for you. Otherwise, tickets are, $30? And then I think we have student, seniors, military, 25, and then you can get $5 off in addition to that with the code Badmouth. I got to say something, Matt Sachs, Roll Tide.
Thank you.
Shifting gears. We had a big football game last night. Was it Georgia ranked number 2 against number 4, Bama? I only caught the highlights. That catch, what do you have? You have a 17-year-old wide receiver.
Yes.
Making circus catches and then doing these like dipsy-doo jukes to get him. It's some crazy stuff. That kid is NFL bound if he doesn't get injured and he's keeps his head on straight.
He's the next Justin Jefferson, if you will.
Yeah.
He's got the potential to be, because like Kevin said, he's 17. He's still growing. You know, he's going to be in the weight room. But talent-wise, he's got mind-blowing talent. Like in a long stream of, I don't want to lose a lot of our audience here, so I'll be really fast.
It's a theater arts culture and Roll Tide. Bama.
In a long stream of very talented Alabama wide receivers going back to 07, 08 with Julio Jones, this kid is like that. He's like a mind-blowing talent in a long line of great talented wide receivers who've gone to the NFL. And won Heisman trophies in the case of Devontae Smith. He's really special. He's a mind blowing talent.
This is a long way of saying that we're not maybe your, I don't know, we're not maybe your normal theater people. I don't know. We're into sports like anybody else. I think the Gophers got robbed a little bit yesterday, but I mean, okay, they put up a fight against Michigan. Go Gophers. And still the number one team in the country, Texas Longhorns, Hook'em Horns. All right. One of my favorite quotes about the theater is from Artaud, Antonin Artaud. And he said that actors are athletes of the heart. And that is my effort to segue back into Moderation. And, you know, you don't have to sell me on that quote. I wheel that quote out every so often, but I'm feeling it right now, having dumped X number of pages on the two of you, and asking for your generosity and your artistic, I guess, souls to sort of embrace it. I don't know if people, if you've never prepared a play, most people will never do act in a two-hander, a difficult contemporary two-hander, and originate it. And you have to like memorize your lines and also pour your spirits into the play. And this play is not, it's comic. There are jokes. You will laugh if you attend, but it is not a comedy. It is a tragedy. So just let me ask you, starting with Matt, because Matt is our guest, on the pod. Amanda's a regular, although Matt, you must be our most frequent guest by now. You're practically a company member. So, Matt, what has it been like? How are you? How's your mental health right now?
I don't want to spoil the show, but I would say I'm in a better mental health place than my character, he. I will say, I will guarantee and promise you that everyone is in the rehearsal room and is safe with me. But I put a lot of pressure on myself whenever I'm in anything to do the best work I possibly can. And the going to your question, you know, like this, it's an intense show, intense scenes, language, you know, characters, just me and Amanda going back and forth at it in the way I like to say it, hammer and tongs. I feel great. I feel all those things that I feel about whenever I'm doing a show. I feel nervous. I want to do my best. I want audiences to really get something from it. And by get something from it, I always mean, I don't like just mean like, you know, entertained or moved, but or educated, because I don't want to, you know, preach to the choir or, you know, but I want all those things. I want them to get something from it. I want them to be moved and see this show, because I think it's great. It's great. And, you know, there's a show right now, I know, on Broadway about a content moderator called Job the Play. And from what I've read about that and ours, I think ours is much more interesting, much more.
I will say I saw that play and I prefer moderation.
Yeah, there you go.
You guys don't have to say this. Listen, I mean, that play got to Broadway. This play, you know, we're starting here. I mean, one of the reasons I jumped to finally just say we're doing this as a company. The play had, for people who are new to this, you're new to Badmouth, you're new to maybe my work and what we're doing. You know, it's not a vanity project what we're doing here. This play had a reading from Spooky Action in DC, which is how I met Amanda. This was during the plague times, which you may recall. And so that was the first vote of confidence for the play. Then Broad Horizons in New York City said, we want to read this play. Then The Blank in LA said, we're going to read this play. This was all on Zoom, and I was dying inside, of course, because this play is about how technology is sort of destroying our souls. And it sort of was. Although I'm a very big tech guy too. It's complicated. And then I did another online reading from a company called Up in New York City. And then I got into the Valdez Theater Conference to develop the play. So the play has what you would call a pedigree. And for people who don't know about new writing and new play development, Mari, you're the fellow playwright in the room. What does it mean to get a reading in a workshop of a play for the life of a play?
I mean, it extends the life of the play. And unfortunately, the way it is in America is if you want to put on a new play, you got to develop it and spread the word and get it a little bit of hype and a little bit of clout before it, hopefully, God willing, goes on to a full production. So getting that many developmental opportunities for a play is a real vote of confidence, because it's just everybody telling you to keep going.
Yeah. And go ahead, Amanda.
Yeah. And there are, I don't want to say a lot, but there are a few, you know, the Playwright Center in Minneapolis, now St. Paul, and the Contemporary American Theater Festival that takes place on the East Coast. You know, there are tons of new plays that have, you know, one or two readings, but to actually have somebody come in and be like, wow, I like that so much, we're going to actually put a full production on, is huge. And so, and I mean, there's got to be thousands of submissions, only so many chosen for the festival, and then only so many worked on, and then only, you know, so many produced. So,
yeah, I mean, the reality is that plays have to be developed. Unless it's a commission, and even if it is a commission, it always starts with readings. And I've written enough plays over my life to know when you start, when you knock on doors and people start opening doors for readings, generally it means there's a play. And that happened for Moderation, but it happened at a very unusual time because nothing was happening IRL, which really breaks my heart, because every one of those Zoom opportunities would have been a chance for me to go out to LA, to go to back to New York, to hang out with people, to make those connections. And I did get probably the ultimate connection so far in my theater career, having met Amanda. I mean, this is a very, we started a theater company together. Here we are. So we sort of turned lemons into lemonade there. But I'm a little, you know, irritated at it. And, you know, and the other reality too, in the theater is that all of the plays that were in the queue to be produced in 2021, 2022, 2023, they're just still playing catch up. So a play like this, and I hope this doesn't sound like cope, a play like this kind of, it ends up being a little orphaned, is how it felt. And there was a theater company in New York City that does sort of development work. And we saw that they had a play called Moderation about social media content moderators. And I had a little panic attack. Because I'm like, wait a minute, that's my play. What's going on? And then you went and saw the reading, and it's not related. And, you know, there are ideas in the ether. And so in any case, we just finally said it's time to do this play. And it is. And I'm really excited. The topic has only become more germane. If you're very online, if you've ever watched Black Mirror, if you're into the drama of Beckett, of Pinter, if you like straight serious plays, by which I mean not musicals, you're really going to enjoy Moderation. And if you just like high quality, high caliber acting up close, you're not going to be this close at the Guthrie. We love the Guthrie. It's a different kind of theater, big institutional theater. This is, you know, itty bitty, in your face, literally in your face, punk theater that we're doing. Matt, I'm going to ask you another question, then I'm going to go back over to Amanda. What have you been doing? I'm also your director, so this is okay. Now we're having a production meeting here. What have you been doing in your process, kind of quietly at home? I mean, are you just drilling a lot, or I mean, like, do you start to feel like you're being consumed by the character? I guess I've never really asked you like how method you get or what you're doing, kind of quietly in the, you know, at night, you know, weeping in your bed.
Well, how do I put this? Like, my technique is not very like methody in that I don't try and get into the character or in that sense of what we think about method, but I have been, you know, I used the Line Learner app. I've recorded my lines. I read the entire play, playing both parts and recording it, so that I can listen to it, and go over the words. I've been doing a lot of research about content moderators because I admittedly, like, I was not familiar with the work and the nature of the work. So I've read, you know, articles that you sent me that you did as part of your research. I've read, and, you know, one article leads to another, you know, one article leads to another. And so you read more about like, okay, what's the work like? Okay, here's how these people are doing it for this company. And then, you know, that's how I found out about Job and the play that I mentioned earlier, that's about a content moderator in New York. And I do not want to criticize it. I've only read about it. I don't know if it's good or not. You know, Mari saw it, so she would be able to better speak to it. But just in reading the synopsis of it and the story of it, I was like, I think ours has a more interesting focus on it because it's about two content moderators, not a content moderator going to talk with somebody outside of the work.
There's always in those plays, and again, I'm not talking trash. I'm just, this is a general annoyance I have at the American theater. There is always the white collar professional intermediary. It's the journalist. It's the therapist. It's the politician. It's the, we have to have somebody to stand in for the good people who are on board with the American project. And I'm a working class kid from the middle of nowhere. I identify more with the lower middle class and the working class. So in my play, we stay inside the thing and we aren't given the nice, good people reprieve, which is what I'm all about in the theater. I'm if I see, and I am guilty because the guy starts writing in the play, but I think you'll see it's somewhat ironic. Yeah, Mari, what's up?
I'll just say that having seen that play, that is not what happens.
Okay,
where I think moderation succeeds is in its form and style. And that's where it's able to get a bit more interesting with it and where it's able to go a bit further because you have, Kevin, you have such a knowledge and love of the theater that you're able to take these things and make them extremely theatrical and go deeper.
Is this other play... And again, we're not critics here. I'm just mostly what this is turning into my pet peeves. So we're not specifically talking about that play, but does it go for kind of a quote unquote realism? Are we in Aaron Sorkin realism land? Very serious, real. Is it real? Because my play goes into
for
like
the majority of the play. Yes. And I will say that I saw this play and I have mutual friends with the playwright, so I will not I'm not here to criticize it.
No, that's fantastic. Listen, take me to Broadway.
There is a millennial relatable element that can peeve me about a lot of theater that's being made that in moderation is not present and I think helps immerse you in the world.
And that very good, very well played there, Murray. That is what this production is going to do. It's not like a magician, you know, nobody's going to pull you up on stage. Don't worry. But like I said, it's going to be in your face. You're going to be right there inside the act of moderating. And the play is written to implicate the audience. The audience is sort of there and right on top of it. I don't know how we would do this play in a big theater in a proscenium style. We could pull it off, but that's not how we're doing it here at the Hive. Yeah, Amanda, and I want to turn to you. I want to talk about your process, you know, what's on your mind too. Yeah. That's not really a question, but do you have something? I can see you nodding and yeah, how are you?
I'm good. You know, I have to say I spend my day off of rehearsals touching a lot of grass, doing a lot of yard work and being outside, get that vitamin D. But I think being a little more online and kind of reading a little, not going too far, but going into where some of these conspiracies originated from, you know, the we didn't land on the moon and the earth is flat and, you know, where do people
We landed on the moon, but the footage was staged. Go on.
Don't give anything.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Hey, listen, if you don't know that by now, I don't know what to tell you.
yeah, but where, on. You know, where do those things originate? Is it one post or one video or one Substack article? And then, you know, what kind of people sort of latch on to those things? And is it during a time in their life? And I think, what I've learned is that there's some sort of, you know, really big instability that happens at their life in a time where they've come across these things and then they sort of latch onto them as sort of a stability factor or thinking that, this idea that everybody else thinks is really true and actually isn't. And they don't know how unstable their life is, just like mine. And so some of those psychological things and also just physically, you know, we are such I think Matt and Kevin and I are older than Mari. So we were, you know, the last sort of generation that wasn't chronically in front of a screen. And what does that physically do to your body? You know, I mean, you know, you're hunching and you got neck issues and and you know, you're you know, losing muscle because you're sitting all day, even if you have a standing desk or a treadmill desk or what. I mean, you can try it all, but sorry, it's not gonna, you know, it'll help somewhat, but you're still, your eyeballs are in front of a screen. And yeah, what does that do, sort of living in your own head with these things being pushed in, you know, images and words being pushed into your brain and not having to sort of assaulted on you, really, sort of a mind assault, and then not interacting with people every day and having sort of normal conversations about the weather and your kids and what did you do last weekend? And, you know, I feel like those are getting less and less and less.
Yeah.
You know, even in an office and on breaks, or if you work, you know, four 10-hour days and you have 3-day weekends. I mean, it's so much more than a 1950s office where, you know, you'd have the water cooler and then people would take smoke breaks and you'd have happy hour. And it, you know, it was much more of a jovial, community centered thing in offices. Yeah, everybody wanted to make money, but it wasn't, you know, like,
yeah, it was also a center of socialization.
Exactly.
Now, Mari, let me, and excuse me for putting you on the spot as the voice of your generation, right? But can Zoomers make small talk? Can your generation make small talk?
I will say, if you can make small talk, you won. There definitely are people who can make small talk and people who can't make small talk. And if you can, then you won.
You've got the riz.
Majority is, yeah, you got that skibbity riz. That's what they say.
Skibbity riz.
But yeah, it really just depends. And I think that as you get more online and as you get more addled, the harder it becomes. I mean, it's kind of a stereotype that a lot of young people can't make small talk, because you ask them how their day is and they're just like, well, you know, I just hid under my covers all day because of all of my trauma, but that's just so relatable. And it's like, I just asked you what you ate last night. I don't really know. Yeah.
Sure. How about those Minnesota Vikings? Yeah, Amanda.
Yeah. And one thing I've noticed, I think a lot of anybody who's kind of worked in a business office or in HR right now knows that hiring, for the last couple of years has been quite a challenge. And we've found, I don't want to say too much, but we've found that a trend among supervisors or people who are hiring in HR, that young people have such hard times in interviews. Their resumes are, you know, just as good as anybody coming out of school and having some entry-level jobs. And, you know, their degrees are right. They're perfect for this role. But they just cannot really sit down in an interview and carry on a conversation and, commiserate
sustain
eye contact, share details of their experiences or their background. And we had one person ask if their parent could attend the interview with them.
Yeah, wow. I mean, listen, people are hurting. You know, and we just went through this crazy time politically. We went through this crazy time with the pandemic. It's amazing that things are still going on the way they are. I'm actually, you can white pill on that and say we are really pretty resilient. I want to make room here right now to talk to Mari, because Mari, you're in the middle of a production of The Maids. And on my other podcast, the podcast about the dark side of creativity, Art of Darkness, at artofdarkpod.com. And I know some Art of Darkness stands listen to this show because they can't get enough of me. They come over here too and they get sucked in. I'm actually really, really happy that we're dragging people into the theater through like literature and the other arts. We're getting them into the sort of redheaded stepchild of the American
kicking
arts.
And the screaming theater. Baby. And you'll
absolutely
love it.
Let's go. It really makes my day though. Cause when I do Art of Darkness, you know, we don't know who's listening and we know we have an audience, but I occasionally hear from somebody who will be like, I'm reading Fitzgerald because of you guys, or I'm reading Conrad because of you guys, or Virginia Woolf. And boy, that makes me happy. It makes me happy. Mari, how is it going? You're doing The Maids by Jean Genet. And if you've ever heard the song Jean Genie by the late, great David Bowie, that's about Jean Genet. How's it going, Mari? Are you, how many more performances do you have? You're in New York. You're doing theater in New York, Mari. I want you to do moderation. I have an idea about who to cast opposite you. We'll talk about it, but I want you to do, we were talking about it yesterday. We're like, we've already got the props. We're going to have the design elements. You just have to memorize 90 minutes of lines.
Well, I just did that. So if I can get those ones out of my head, maybe I can go back. But it's interesting doing the maids at the same time that you guys are doing moderation, because I do think that in a way they're really similar plays. The maids is not technically a two-hander. There is like a, I would say like a 7-8 minute break in the middle where there's another play. But for the majority of the play, it is just me and one other actor, my good friend Kara Gordon, who is incredibly talented on stage, losing our minds at work.
Mm-hmm. That's what it's about.
I think these themes are sort of in the air of work driving everybody crazy. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that this play has done anything to my mental health the way that maybe working on moderation would, partly because it's a little bit more classical and the language is a little bit more heightened, and it's a little bit more comical and ridiculous than moderation. So it's easier to separate yourself, but it's a great way to, I don't know, it's great to be doing these plays sort of in tandem. But Kevin, I mean, I want to throw it back to you now that we've discussed our various plays. I want to throw it back to you because I feel like you've been asking all the questions. Is this your first time directing your own work? Because last time you directed a show for Badmouth, it was Sean Raycraft's One Good Marriage a year ago at the Phoenix Theater. Is this your first time directing your own work?
How is that going? It's the very first time directing my own work. I've only directed one other play, One Good Marriage, which you can hear a reading of in the archives here at Badmouth Theater Company, badmouthtc.com. I'm co-directing it with Megan Gunderson. Yes, Megan. Hello, Megan. We're going to have to get her on the pod here. And, you know, so I'm happy to have her along and her involved because she gives an objective eye, but I'm pretty heavy in the room. I'm kind of leading the process. And, I don't know, because I wrote this play so long ago and because I'm not in the process of workshopping it while we're doing it, I'm able to take my playwright hat off and I've had my director hat on, and having had that experience of directing One Good Marriage, I'm able to flex, that muscle. I would not consider myself a director or a director first, although I guess technically I am now. I would always lean toward having someone else direct my own work first if they came to me with a real vision. Mm. I had a vision for this. I'm enjoying it, Mari. It's nice. I only made one tiny cut in the room. Tiny. Is that what you were going to ask, Mari?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you've changed anything in the room.
One tiny cut in the room, which I think makes the play a little bit better. It's minor. I will, when we're done, and actually this week, I will be bringing my laptop into the theater, and I'm going to be making my kind of what will hopefully be a revision that we then take to you, Mari, maybe New York. I know London is calling. We may be doing it there. So the script is going to change between now and whatever ends up being published, but only in minor ways, principally around sort of stage directions, what precisely is happening, when there are going to be certain things there. I'm like, we can't lose that. It's got to be like that. Yeah, but it's been really, really fun. And of course, a lot of it, I think David Mamet said, it's like directing is mostly just about getting out of the way, putting the pieces together and then getting out of the way. And that's really it, right? Like, we have two very talented actors. They are on the podcast with us right now. If everybody does their job, you're fine. So what then is the job of the director? Hey, maybe don't do that in that moment. Or maybe you should be standing here when you do that. I can't see you. Like, well, go ahead, Matthew.
One thing I will say is, like, having the playwright in the room as the director does give me an opportunity to say, like, what did you specifically mean, like, when you wrote this? Or, like, what do you think is the underlying motivation here? Or what's the subtext here? Or in your head when you wrote this, like, what did you see them doing? You know, that's something that, you know, I find valuable. You know, it gives me an insight in, because you created these characters. So if I can ask the director, who is also the writer, when you wrote this, you know, how did you see it? Or, you know, how did you think, is this, you know, the subtext of that? That's very valuable to me. And there's things in the play, like, I don't think this is a spoiler, but like, you know, they, when they have to go to the restroom, they tap a button on their screen. And that was something I had to do in an office that I worked as in as a professional fundraiser over the phone telemarketing. So when I read the script originally, I was like, yeah, that's accurate. You know, that's what we had to do. You know, we had to click a little button and it started a stopwatch on the screen and it showed us how long we were taking to go to the bathroom, which was out in the hall. It was one bathroom.
Easy.
It was one bathroom. You know, you had to wait to go into it. If somebody was in it, you know, you'd watch around the room, try and time it out when you had to go to the bathroom, you know, if someone was coming back or going to it. So, you know, when you ask me about what I've been thinking about with the work and the character, yeah, I've been hearkening back to those days where I worked for a year as a professional fundraiser in an office like that with screens lined up, no dividers, no cubicles, being on the phone, 4-hour shift, you know, short breaks, half an hour for lunch, you know, four hour. You had to clock. Yeah. If you were 2 minutes late, you had to wait 2 hours and then clock in after that 2 hour time and make up for the 2 hours that you missed. If you were more than 2 minutes late.
Go on, Mari.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just Matt, hearing you talk about that, it's so crazy that those things are so normal, but you don't see them specifically in the theater. You know, and this is the second part of my question is, I feel like there were so many office critical, like Gen X movies, like Fight Club, Office Space. I'm curious, Kevin, what do you think is behind the sort of decline of the office story? Why did it have such a heyday? Why are you bringing it back?
Yeah, I was on mute there. I have an email job. I had to work in an office in New York City 2 or 3 days a week there for a stretch for like a consulting company that would use this horrible phrase bio break. Unironically, I felt my soul dying ever so slightly. And the little room that we ended up having in the quarter, like the IT guy was there. My manager was there. There was a little motley crew there in the corner and we would just talk trash all day. I'd come in and I can give as good as I can take, but there would be weeks where I would come into the middle of it and they would be just down a rabbit hole and I'd have to kind of like hold my own in the conversation or leave. So writing this play sort of came from that experience. As far as like Gen X and everything goes, I'm not Gen X. I'm early millennial. I'm right on the cusp. Listen, Gen X really wanted their MTV. And when you put that up against cubicles, you get Office Space and that kind of vibe. And MTV, like, listen, Gen X got their MTV and they got it good and hard. I don't think people remember like MTV was a massive cultural force in the 80s into the 90s, and then MTV is what gave us reality television. And so that generation was just so influenced by cable TV, MTV. And then I think the disappointment of having to go into the office was quite shocking to people. And I tasted some of that pre-social media time. My first job out of the University of Minnesota, the great University of Minnesota, go Gophers. I got a job. I had a degree in history and philosophy, Mari. It turns out there aren't a lot of philosophy jobs on the market. Although philosophy majors do make the most money out of the liberal arts majors because we tend to be very thoughtful. Hang on one second, Mari. I'll tell you my story. So my first job was at a packaging machinery company in Northeast Minneapolis. And I would have to add all these big ideas, you know, and I don't even know what I thought I was going to do, but I knew I needed a job, right? And so I would go into work every morning and it's Minnesota. And so the weather would get cold and then it would get darker. You know, it would be dark when I would come into the office, dark when I would leave the office. And I had to walk in to an old factory floor that had been converted to the most cubicle, boring, bland, blasé office you've ever seen. And the outer wall had offices dedicated to middle management. And I am not joking when I say I would have to say hello to Steve number one, Steve number two, Steve number three on my way in. It was like something straight out of Office Space. It was the three-headed hound of hell in my own personal nightmare there. So I just I can't explain where that comes from, but anybody who spent a lot of time in an office answering to guys named Steve all day, you could sort of relate to what it's like to be in a job that's really awkward and uncomfortable. But then now imagine you go to a job like that and you have to do content moderation and have to like watch the most horrific content that is being produced in real time by the fire hose of the internet. It's bad enough to have to deal with three Steves in a row, but then to have to do that and do this horrible, hellish job, that's kind of where moderation comes from. But Mari, you had your hand up real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I was just curious if you heard like 5-6 years ago, there was a time sort of in the pre-AI boom when all the tech companies were hiring poets out of the MFA programs to come work on something. It was sort of unclear what it was. And I think it's probably something like an LLM, but there was a big boom, I think in like 2019, where they were hiring poets out of these MFA programs to come work in Silicon Valley.
That sounds like a myth. That sounds like,
I saw the postings, people were posting them.
That sounds like Silicon Valley guys trying to broaden the dating pool in San Francisco. what's up, Amanda? You had something.
No, I was just thinking about then the kind of the natural evolution of the times we're living in are a little bleak, but it's the natural evolution of The Office sitcom mixed with Black Mirror.
Yeah, this is like if Jim in The Office was slowly waterboarded by Hellraiser type imagery and ended up going not marrying Pam, shall we say. If you're into that kind of thing, you're gonna love moderation, and it's actually a good October play. It's a good spooky season play because it's, you know, it goes to some pretty dark, pretty intense places, but always with a laugh until the very end when we stop laughing. Go on, Amanda. Then I want to ask Matt some more stuff.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to do a quick plug for moderation isn't horror, but I know TC Horror Fest is coming up in spooky October. And we had the lovely Nissa on, I think probably last year around this time. And if you're looking for something to do that's not just sitting in a movie theater or, you know, you did all the hayride kind of things, go check out the Twin Cities Horror Fest. They have some really spooky, awesome, really different things to do. So, yeah, check that out, but also check moderation out.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this as ever and you have a show in the Twin Cities, not just theater, anything, theater, arts, culture, food, whatever, if you're creative and you're making things in the Twin Cities, badmouthtc@gmail.com. We are always looking for guests. This show goes out over 94.1 Frogtown Radio in St. Paul. It's syndicated by Minnesota Playlist. You will get some people listening to this. It's not, we don't do Rogan numbers, but we have fun and we want to have you on. It's a very low lift. You just come on for 1 hour. It's on Zoom. Email us, pitch us, tell us about yourself, badmouthtc@gmail.com. If you're in Twin Cities Horror Fest, if you're an actor going, how do we put butts in seats? If you're directing a show, if you've written a show, here's how you put butts in seats. Email badmouthtc@gmail.com and say, I want to come on Mouthing Off. We will probably not say no unless you're totally crazy. you would have to be really, really far out for us to say no. We want to have you on. We want to put you on.
I was going to say, I don't know. We got the three of us loons on here doing the show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. You're going to fit right in.
Exactly.
Matthew, tell people a little more about what you've got going on. I mean, you're a frequent guest. What are you doing next? Do you have anything coming up after we do moderationplay.com, moderation at the Hive, October 3rd to the 13th, 2024? What else you got going on?
Oh, well, I'm a member of Shadow Horse Theater Company, and we're always working on stuff. Matt Kelly, who's been a guest, you know, has our podcast, Dark Pony Radio. It's I hope people will check that out. You know, again, like, it's Halloween season, scary season. So it's a podcast that has horror stories and the supernatural and all sorts of great. And we just, you know, just finished one, you know, written by you and Abby, Kevin, that's still available to listen to, the latest episodes of The Basilisk with me and Amanda. So I hope people will check that out. We're still doing, and we have new season coming up. I know they're in rehearsal working on them. I've been so focused on moderation. You know, I'm kind of taking a step back so that they can do the new episodes without me. We are still doing a drinking game, Minnesota. I just did Beetlejuice earlier this month, which was fun.
It was real fun to do. I love doing it. I love doing that voice and playing that character. I had a great time. We have show coming up this weekend with Scream. And we're doing Hocus Pocus as well this month of October. So Scream and Hocus Pocus, a drinking game, Minnesota. Those will be coming up. And then I'm just trying to focus on I'm trying to focus on this show. You know, I'm still like laser focused on our show, on moderation. I am starting something. I am working on something that kind of flows into the beginning of November soon, but really I'm focused on our show. And you know, in what you asked me about earlier, Kevin, yeah, I've been harkening back to my days as a on-screen, you know, fundraiser and telemarketer, and using that stuff from my work experience, my actual work experience, to help me with this show and this character. You know, I've worked in those offices, not as a content moderator, but like I said, like telemarketing, being on the phone 8 hours a day, having to deal with the public, you know, making cold calls. And I also work in retail, so I deal with customers in a different way. So I've been focusing on that a lot and really, you know, wondering the ideas about this show. And, you know, Mari talked about it, like The Maids is like almost like a workplace show, that ours is a show in a workplace. I think there's a big segment of people who are looking to understand how people are working jobs like content moderating, but also plays like, you know, The Flick by Annie Baker about working in a movie theater, A Bright New Boise about working in a big box, like Hobby Lobby kind of store. I think these are plays about real people working real jobs. I know Sweat by Lynn Nottage has been a big, you know, hit, but that isn't in the workplace. You know, it's at the bar that they go to after work, where they're talking about work issues. I think there's something very, very, I don't want to say twisted or wrong, but there's something in the American workplace and the people who are working in there that's being not thought about and kind of neglected. Mm-hmm. And working these jobs and doing retail work, you know, starter jobs for kids, like in restaurants and movie theaters and stuff. And now these kinds of what we call tech jobs, which includes this, you know, content moderation, the moderators in our play, these are tough jobs in a different way. They're not what Mike Rowe would call dirty jobs, you know. And I work, my other third job besides being an actor and working in retail is in the plumbing and drain cleaning industry. Mm-hmm. And drain cleaners and septic workers are doing and their work. And these are tough. These are tough jobs that people are working. And I think our play shows how important workplace culture and workplace, what the effect the workplace can have on everyday people, on the average person. These characters.
Yes. Yes. So many thoughts here. We are winding down, but yeah, Mari.
I just think that the workplace is so rife with dramatic potential, because it feels like one of maybe the last place where if you want to keep your job, you can't let it all out. And there's really nothing more compelling than watching people trying to keep it together. I mean, one of the things they taught me in acting school was it's much more compelling to watch someone try not to cry than to watch someone cry. And then when you do let it all out and you do, you know, I don't want to say have a breakdown, but you do let the drama reach its full potential at work, it's so satisfying, because that's really the place where you're not supposed to do that. And I think moderation does that so well.
Right. And these are the people, you know, that you spend arguably just as much time with as your own family, as your partner or spouse or your children. And so they may see a side of you that's not, you know, that's your work side, but, you know, there are times where it bleeds over. And I think we're in an era where that's happening more and more frequently.
Interesting. Yeah, the thought I had, you know, before we go here, and then I'll give the plugs again. Of course, we're trying to get you out to the show. Please come if you're listening, and you're in the Twin Cities, and even over in Wisconsin, we'll let you come in. The Vikings are kicking off against the Packers for the first time this season in exactly 1 minute. So, I know, yeah, Skol Vikings. There we go. I know everybody's very excited for that. I'm not going to say anything more because. Let's see what happens as the season progresses, shall we say. But there's something about like dignity at work and what work used to mean and what it doesn't mean anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that hits Americans especially hard because hitherto we had something like the work ethic. And now what we're left with is this idea that it's really not worth that much anyway. We're all sort of kind of being replaced vaguely. We're all under total surveillance at all times. The corporations have become these big international behemoths that don't all seem to really have our interest in mind. And we all are sort of made to feel like widgets. And when you put that up against, dare I say, the old Protestant work ethic, as it was called, and remove the meaning from it and even like make it so that the jobs don't like even remotely pay enough to build a life, like the line has gone up and now it's going down and quality of life is degrading. It really creates this toxic sense of alienation and anxiety over the purpose and the meaning of life itself when we don't even have the very basic dignities of work. And we still have all the horrors of the previous work regime, where it's normal in America to start working and to get 2 weeks paid time off. That's what you get. And two sick days or whatever. And it's just like, and if you tell that to, say, a European, they think it's barbaric and like rightly. And so we work ourselves to death in this country. And hitherto, it seemed to be pointing towards something, and I'm afraid to say that something is gone. And that's a little bit about what moderation is about. Matt, give your pitch. Why should people come see this play? October 3rd to the 13th, moderationplay.com. Why should they come and see you? Your last words from the great Matt Sachs.
Oh, well, why should they see me? Because I get to perform with Amanda Forstrom in a world premiere, brilliantly written play about ideas that I think are really important right now. And I also think people should see plays because they're plays, they're live people. Support local artists. You know, again, I've said this before on this show, we tell people to buy local when it comes to their restaurants and the food they eat and everything. Support local artists, you know, make that to your art, include that in your art choices. You know, that's why come see Moderation, go see the drinking game shows, go see Twin Cities Horror Fest with local artists and creators making art for you. So all those reasons, I think. But really, this is a chance to see a world premiere play. And it's,
yeah.
And I think you'll really, really be experienced by it.
Indeed. You're going to leave going, what just happened? Amanda.
Yeah, I was exact same thing. I'm going to piggyback off of Matt and just say it's a world premiere production. It's been in the works in some big circles and big theaters, had some great readings. And I think, yeah, local playwrights, local actors, local artists. And I think people are going to be surprisingly blown away that they don't have to spend, you know, $50 a ticket, $75 a ticket, and be blown away by something in the theater. And they don't have to, spend a lot of money, find, you know, parking is free on the street. And yeah, you don't have to support the corporate thing, the corporate theater all of the time. You know, we like to shop local buy local, bank local.
There you go.
Yeah, it's all about building those community connections.
Yeah.
So
come see Moderation at the Hive October 3rd to the 13th by me, directed by me, featuring the great Mad Sax, Amanda Forstrom. And if you're out in New York, go see Mari Sittner in The Maids at the Circle Theater Festival, at The Flea. And then who knows, maybe in the future, Mari will be taking Amanda's place. Mari will be Amanda's metaphor. She'll be replacing Amanda. It's
not
little,
possible. She's one of a kind.
Oh no. Full on replacement.
All right. Moderationplay.com. Thank you. We are Badmouth Theater Company. This is Frogtown Radio, 94.1 FM. Beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota.